Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Absolution Insured by Matt Wallace. I went 3/5 into a bottle of Grey Goose before bed, and my dreams were as liquored up as the rest of me. Fuck it. I had the next day off, right? My tie, the red one with the little gold frogs on the little gold lily pads, stiffening in my freezer was proof of that. I tossed it in there around 7:30 when I got home. Don't ask me why. I hadn't even taken my first drink of the evening yet. I just liked seeing it laying there over a frozen pizza box, half masking the Red Baron and his handlebar mustache, so that he kind of looked like Powers Booth in an Amelia Earhart cap. I liked slamming the freezer door on it even more. If my cubicle at the ad agency had a door, maybe none of this would be necessary. So I was dreaming crazy dreams about falling or fucking or being chased by maniac circus clowns making pornographic balloon animals. Who knows? Then the knocking. Scratch that. Pounding diesel pistons on my brain and what felt like a few blown rods. While my eyelids were trying to remember how to open, I realized it was the front door, which, owing to my walk-in apartment, is all of 5 feet from where I sleep. I got out of bed, slipped once, rubbed crusty, primordial-feeling things from my eyes, slipped again, then wrestled with the deadbolt and chain the way troglodytes and idiots wrestle with airplane seatbelts. Carrie stood in my hallway. Or rather, a big blur that looked sort of like Carrie. I ground my knuckles into my eyes some more. Yeah, it was him, and several dozen bright spots dancing around him.
"Hey, McBride," he said. "It's late, I know. Sorry. You were sleeping. Were you sleeping?" "Yeah, of course you were sleeping."
He sounded kinda like Christopher Walken from his last scene in The Deer Hunter. The only reason I didn't say something like, "Do you know what time it is?" was how cliche it rang in my head. I think I just nodded.
"Let me come in, okay?
Carrie said. Now he sounded nervous, anxious. I looked at him, really looked at him for the first time. His right hand was wrapped in a towel. A bloody towel, I realized. Every inch completely soaked through. It was a dish towel with pink and yellow flowers on it. His mom's, I figured. He would have stopped by his mother's place first. Probably lied to her. There was blood matted in his emo frontman haircut, too. And his clothes were rumpled. I stepped aside and let him in. Carrie looked around my place like there was something to see. Maybe he was dazed, or maybe what was going on hadn't really hit him yet. This is all stuff I reflected on later. At that moment, I was just annoyed. Carrie was a peripheral friend, the kind you sort of inherit or acquire secondhand because you're friends with someone else. Still, he was a friend. We hung out. We called each other when we had an extra ticket or something, although Carrie usually charged me for his. But we didn't do late-night confessions, and I wasn't his emergency contact person.
"You got some milk, man?"
Carrie asked me.
"I'm thirsty, feeling a little calcium deficient, you know? My bones, they feel brittle."
"Yeah, I've got some milk in the fridge. When I saw he wasn't going to or couldn't find his way to my kitchen, I said, "I'll get it." On second thought, "I'll get you a high life. It's your brain that sounds brittle. It'll soften it up."
"Yeah, right. Good idea."
I found myself keeping an eye on him all the way to the kitchen, peering at him over the door of my refrigerator as I groped for the long neck. "You want a bandage, too?" I asked.
"Huh?"
"Your hand, dickhead."
"Oh."
Carrie looked at it like some foreign thing.
Maybe. I don't know.
"What the hell is wrong with you?"
"Fucking, it's crazy, dude. It's just I, fucking Logie."
I nearly sliced my fingers on the ridges of my bottle cap.
"What?" I got a Logie.
He took the Miller from me with his good hand and sat down.
There's one after me.
"You're telling me there's a Logie chasing you?" Carrie chugged the brew, and I mean chugged. I could actually see his throat muscles opening up. He looked like one of those drinking dolls with the baby bottles.
"Yeah,"
he finally answered me.
"Fucking crazy, right?
You got a Logie, and you came here? What's wrong with you?"
I didn't know where else to go, man. I mean, Christ, the thing, look at my hand. Look at my fucking hand. It did that. I'm a righty, man. I eat with this hand. I write with it. It's fucked now."
"What did you expect it to do, Carrie? And what did you do, anyway?"
You remember I was going out with that girl from Scranton? Barda?
How could I forget a fucking name like Barda?
"Yeah, I know, right."
Carrie stared into the now empty bottle in his hand for a while. Then he went on.
"Anyway, I borrowed some money from her before we broke up. For my Super B."
"Okay," I said.
"And I fucked her cousin, Ramona."
"Of course," I said dryly.
"So, I guess she finally found out. She called me yesterday all pissed off. Things were said, I got pissed off too, and I kind of told her what she could do with the loan. I wasn't paying her back, and so on."
"But you meant it when you said it, didn't you?"
I guess.
"Malice, promises, threats. They're just words like abracadabra. Who you fuck, just frailty most of the time. It's your intentions that bring a Logie when you boil it down. And malicious intentions are the worst. Callous, only slightly less so. And betrayal is like icing. So, now you've officially stolen her money under the pretense of caring about her," I said. "And you used it to fuck with her."
"I guess so."
Carrie was screwed. I didn't have any doubts about that. "So, go give her the fucking money and beg forgiveness," I advised him. "You really need me to counsel you on this?"
"Barda got a new job. She moved to Birmingham."
Shit. Correction. Carrie was royally, imperially screwed.
"England or Alabama?" I asked.
"Alabama." Well, thank God for small favors. I'd get on the road if I were you. Carrie didn't say anything for a minute. Then he looked up at me glassy-eyed and he asked,
"Can you drive me, dude?"
"You got a car?" I said, as flat a statement as I could make.
Had a car.
He laughed, an absurd, scared laugh. "The Logie?" I asked, even though it wasn't really a question.
tore it to shit, man. It was like that monkey in that Clint Eastwood movie who stripped the cars. Only a lot faster, and instead of being funny, I was fucking terrified for my life.
So really, nothing like the monkey in the Clint Eastwood movie, I said.
Guess not.
You seriously expect me to jump in the car with you and drive 1,000 miles tonight?
Ollie's car's in the shop. I couldn't get a hold of Jimmy. Woodhouse told me to eat shit and die because of the thing at the place with the people that time. I can't tell my folks. I just can't. And there's something else.
What?
I need a loan.
Eat shit and die, Carrie.
Come on, Mac. I got nobody else. I need your fucking help here. It's a logie.
So go see a karmic healer.
You know that's all bullshit, man. I gotta go see this chick. She's gotta absolve me. I need you to drive me. I need cash to pay her back. Please. I'll be your fucking slave for life.
I'm staunchly against slavery. I've campaigned on this issue. But like I said, I knew how screwed Carrie was. I guess I can TiVo house, I said, as bland as the taste in my mouth. We all count absolutions versus logies now. The absolution you give people being chased by logies, and the logies that chase you. Myself, I've given absolution to 2 people, an ex-girlfriend and a co-worker. Each their own long story. I've only had 1 logie when I was 18, and not yet the solid citizen I eventually became. I was still angsty, still had some daddy issues, and I went joyriding in someone else's car without their permission. Then I ran it into an embankment. Now, logies don't come after joyriders generally, but the car belonged to a college kid from a poor family. I knew him. And in those days, it made me feel better when other people felt worse. And if they were weaker than me, then all the more power to myself. His parents had saved up all through his teens to buy that car for him. And then his father died right after he got a scholarship to Clarion University. It meant a lot. I ended up putting my own freshman year off so I could take a full-time job and replace the car. Fortunately for me, the kid was willing to absolve me on consignment. I still have a scar on my ass, which is usually where you get it when you try to run. I was just a little kid when the logies started showing up, and they never come after children, or at least it's very rare. By the time I was old enough to wrong another human being with malice, the spectacle had faded from the whole deal. The logies were a reality, and the country was dealing with the practical issues of their existence. Prisons were the biggest hot zones right off. I remember seeing pictures of the fire lines the Department of Corrections instituted in Newsweek. The roads running through the prison areas with signs telling you not to pick up hitchhikers were replaced with logie detours. Washington, D.C. became Sodom and Gomorrah at last call. Congress was shut down for 2 weeks. The Archbishop of the Diocese in New York declared it Judgment Day until the logies started hitting churches, and the Catholics got it the worst. They'd done shit to so many people so far back, there weren't enough great-grandchildren to absolve them. So naturally, the logies became demons. Most of the major religions formed their own UN and rallied together. The Mormons passed. Logies pretty much left them alone. I guess being stupid doesn't count unless you do it on purpose. Demons or not, the one thing we've learned is logies are never wrong. I spent the rest of the night behind the wheel of my Passat. I hadn't slept enough to be hungover, so I guess I was still drunk. And it turns out, I was out of Folger's singles. The best I could do is tune my XM radio to Squiz. System of a Down at 5 a.m. is the musical equivalent of Brazilian coffee. The clothes I wore came out of the hamper and they smelled like it.
and on top of everything else, I forgot my glasses. Carrie put the passenger seat back and was out before I pulled away from the curb. I stopped to fill up and to max out my fucking credit cards to cover Carrie's tab with Barda. All while he was curled around the graphite Easton he took from my apartment, like a kid with a teddy bear. Like my baseball bat was going to protect him from the Logie. 20 years and they still haven't been able to capture one and hold it indefinitely. At least nothing has been confirmed. Fire can repel them. That's still the best we've got. But don't pay the jacked up prices they charge your average Logie-fearing consumer for a glorified drip torch. If you're not manning one of those Road Warrior flame-throwing turrets, you're just going to piss the thing off. Somewhere near Huntington, Carrie started to stir.
Mac?
I heard him croak.
Yeah.
You believe in karma? He asked. It sounded like someone talking to you in a dream.
What?
You said go to a karmic healer. I was just trying to get you out of my apartment before I started feeling sorry for you. So you don't believe in karma?
No, Carrie, I don't believe in karma.
So where do you think they come from?
Heaven?
Hell? Do you believe those quantum physics guys? Negative reactions and all that?
I don't think about it.
I remember reading about that Yale psychophysicist guy or whatever. He thought it was all some kind of mass paranoid psychosis deal.
That guy falsified his research. 8 of his test subjects were killed. Logie ripped his head off and regurgitated it on Wooster Square.
Oh, well. So what do you think?
I told you, I don't think about it.
What do you mean? Everybody thinks about it. Everybody wants to understand why.
Carrie, I don't understand how the engine in my car works. Why the fuck would I start with something like that?
What do you mean?
I mean, right now there's a bum stewing in some gutter pondering the meaning of his existence. You want to know my philosophy? Deal with the question of why you're covered in vomit and won't take your antipsychotic medication, and then maybe work up to life, the universe, and everything. Gradually.
Kind of like your prayers are answered in the order they're received?
No, Carrie. I shook my head. You make the worst fucking analogies of anyone I ever met.
All right. Don't be an asshole, okay? You don't gotta get mad. I was just thinking out loud.
You weren't thinking. You were babbling. You don't think. What are you going to say to Barda, Carrie? Just giving her the money isn't enough, you know. She has to forgive you. Have you thought about what you're going to say?
I'm going to, you know, say I'm sorry.
She won't believe you.
Why not?
Because you'll be lying.
Oh, Carrie said. Then more on the defensive. How do you know?
You're not sorry, Carrie. You're a user. You're like Ole and Jimmy and Woodhouse and the rest of those fucking assholes from the office. You're the kind of guy who, if I showed up at your door tonight with a Logie on my ass, either your car would be in the shop, or you wouldn't answer the door, or you'd tell me to eat shit.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably, I agreed.
So, why didn't you? He asked.
You're my friend.
Wouldn't know it from all that shit you just said, man.
Yeah, well, fortunately for you, I'm the kind of guy who doesn't believe in dicing people up. I either accept all the bad shit with the good in somebody, or I don't at all. And for some ungodly reason, I accepted you a long time ago. So here I am.
Carrie was quiet for a while. Then he said, in a very weird way for Carrie,
I'm sorry, Mac.
Well, see, I said.
That was honest. The morning came, blue irradiating everything. Then it turned gray. We stopped for gas near the Virginia-Tennessee border. The sign said Fancy Mart, but it turned out to be less like a 7-Eleven and more like a general store, with ices and lottery tickets. I gave Carrie the task of filling the tank, something I was reasonably sure even he couldn't fuck up, while I went inside. There was an old man behind the counter, frog-faced, white-haired, wearing a Santa Claus undershirt with a Red Cross logo on it, and a ball cap proclaiming Cougars Pocahontas J.F.E. Court Tourney Champions 2005, with the year done in a flourish. Good for the Cougars, I remember thinking. Say hey, the old man greeted me, way too enthusiastic for 6 o'clock in the morning, but his smile was warm, probably a friendly type. Hey, I said, not trying to be a wise ass. Well, not really, anyway. You look like the wrong end of the dog, son. Been driving all night? Hands wet on the wheel, I assured him. Golden earring, the old man nodded. I get it. I grinned a little. Decided to stop being snarky with the old guy. He seemed nice. Well, the coffee's fresh, he said. Just brewed it myself. Appreciate that. I poured 2 coffees. Took 2 pale club sandwiches wrapped in cellophane from a cold case against the wall, and a road map, just in case. I map-quested the trip before we left the city, but you never know with their directions. What the hell is a slight left, anyway? While the old man was ringing me up, I remembered I was supposed to play ball with some of the guys from accounting that afternoon. I figured it was only polite to call Svetterberg, payrolls starting forward, and let him know. No bars. Outside network, my cell phone informed me, which was bullshit. I paid for the nationwide plan. The only place my phone wasn't supposed to work is Alaska, goddammit. You guys get bad cell reception around here? I asked the old-timer. Nah, he said as he made change. Up the mountains. That's a ways. Never have trouble with mine here in the station. Sudden loss of cell phone reception. That's one of the early warning signs. I had the sleeves of the work shirt I was wearing rolled up, and my arms had been prickling for the last minute. I thought it was just from opening the freezer. Above the counter, the old man had one of those Marlboro ads with a paper clock and a thermometer pasted to it. I checked. The mercury was below 60. It was the middle of spring. Sudden drop in temperature within a 1-mile radius. That's another early warning sign. The old man was putting my stuff in a fold-out cardboard box, arranging them carefully like he was going to serve me breakfast in bed. I grabbed the other sandwich and the map myself and dropped them in the box. Hurried a thanks goodbye with him, and I was headed for the door. As soon as I pulled it open, I knew the effort was too late. I thought we'd have more time, me and Carrie. The Logie got a good piece of him back in the city, that big chunk it took out of his hand. I thought that would sate the thing long enough to give us a head start we needed. Sometimes a piece of a person will hold them for a while. I guess in this case, the piece just wasn't big enough. The whirring. That's your final warning. According to the National Emergency Advisory Board, I should have gone back inside and locked the door behind me, then proceeded to duck and cover. I didn't, of course. I couldn't. I'd spotted Carrie. He heard the whirring, too. He'd grabbed my baseball bat out of the front seat, and now he was standing, braced against the open passenger side door in his best Sammy Sosa stance. I couldn't believe it, not even after knowing the guy for 2 years. He was actually going to try to tee off on the Logie. Carrie had sighted it in the distance, and it had a lock in him now, no doubt about it. I didn't look, partly because I couldn't take my eyes off the stupidity monument he'd made of himself, and partly, mostly, because I didn't want to see it. Not again. You see a Logie once, and that's enough. More than. The wind was rising hard, and all kinds of shit was blowing down the road behind and around the pumps. And the whirring, holy fucking God, it was splitting my brain.
It'd gotten so loud. "Carrie, don't be a fucking idiot!" I yelled over it. "Carrie!"
Nothing. He didn't even turn his head. He was in its headlights now, watching the Logie barrel down, screaming through the air at him. He was either scared or resolved or driven to avenge his jerking offhand. I still don't know. I spilled coffee and sandwiches all over the ground and ran at him. I meant to tackle Carrie into the front seat of my car in one smooth, fluid motion, but owing to the narrow passage of the doorway and the height of the roof, and the fact that I play basketball instead of football for a very good reason, I ended up having to grab him, wrestle him inside the car, and then crawl on top of him, and it took twice as long as it should have anyway because I started to panic. So maybe in the movies, it would have been a perfect last-minute save. Clean. In reality, when the Logie hit the spot where Carrie had been standing, it took off three of my toes, most of my sole skin, and snapped my right ankle in half. That was pain you don't even feel, at least not for more than a second or two. Then the shock mainlines itself. My last lucid thought was that the sound of the passenger door being ripped off my Passat was actually the sound of my bones breaking. That didn't help. And needless to say, the Logie ruined my new Nike cross trainer. I don't remember the next few hours very well. What I remember is clinging to the notion that we had to keep moving and get this thing done. It seems like such a shit move now. Most hospitals won't treat Logie victims unless they can provide proof of absolution. And try finding a state-funded Logie triage in an emergency in the South. But Carrie could have dropped me off at the ER and taken my car the rest of the way himself. Only I know, and I think I knew even then, without help, he was finished. The old man set my ankle, which hurt more than having it broken. He rigged a splint out of a mop handle and wrapped my foot as best he could, clotting the stump or stumps with cotton balls. Carrie was sick about my toes. He combed the pumps for them, but I finally cursed him out until he stopped. I knew there was nothing to find. He drove the rest of the way while I rode it out in the back seat with my ankle elevated on a sleeping bag I'd had in my trunk for 2 years since the last time I actually went camping. I self-medicated with aspirin and wild turkey. Both were on the house back at the gas station. I never even got the old guy's name. 2 miles down the road from the Fancy Mart, we passed the Passat's passenger door. It was folded in half on the solid yellow line, and 2 crows were perched on top of the window frame. One of them flapped its wings and squawked as we drove by. I still think the little fucker was laughing at us.
"How you doing there, McBride?"
Carrie asked a while later. "You owe me 2 grand and 3 of your toes, you motherfucker." Carrie kind of laughed.
"You're okay," he said.
I passed out for a while. When I woke up, Carrie was listening to some shit like the Pussycat Dolls on my radio. I told him if he didn't change the station, I'd pull Mariah Carey out of his ass and beat him to death with her. And I may have said something derogatory about his mother, possibly involving the creative use of an eggplant. I passed out again. We crossed the Birmingham city limits around 4 o'clock that afternoon. Carrie woke me up to tell me.
"Almost there, Mac," he said. "Almost there. Then we'll get you to the ER, no problem."
"Yeah," was all I had energy for. Barda had moved into a duplex. The street was quiet, empty, a lot more grass than I was used to. Carrie parked it at the curb. He counted the money twice.
"Just fucking go already," I told him when I heard him starting a third count.
"Fine," Carrie griped.
"God."
He didn't bother to open the driver's side door. He just hopped into the passenger seat and stepped through the gaping hole where my other door used to be. I watched him, shuffling more than walking up the stairs to the second level of the duplex. He almost knocked with his fucked up hand, reconsidered it, and used his other one.
He had to knock again before Barda opened the door. I'd only met her once or twice. She was thick through the hips, a lot of piled-up dark hair like a centerfold from the 60s. She was wearing tennis shorts and a tank. Sexy. Especially the way she was smoldering looking at Carrie. They traded maybe 4 sentences. Carrie came back to the car empty-handed and still looking like Atlas pre-shrug. "She take the money?" I asked.
"Yeah,"
he said. "And?"
"And she called me a name I won't repeat and slammed the door."
"Did you tell her there's a Logie after you?"
"Yeah."
"What did she say?"
"Good."
"Oh, for Christ's sakes," I said. Wedging myself between the front seats, I could feel the dull ache of my foot all the way to my throat. "You got your cell phone?" I asked Carrie, opening the glove box.
"Yeah,"
he said. "Get it," I told him, taking out my hands-free set and handing it to him. "Plug that into your phone and put the earpiece in."
"Why?"
he asked. "Because we're gonna Cyrano de Bergerac this shit. Because I don't have time to teach you to be a human being. Just do it." He did it. "Now go back there and knock on her door again. If she doesn't answer, then knock again. If she still doesn't answer, then yell what I tell you to yell through the door. Got it?"
"I feel like an asshole,"
Carrie said. "You should," I told him. "Now go." He went. I was almost afraid, was afraid, to check my own cell. But when I did, I had service. I dialed Carrie.
"Hello?"
he answered, like he didn't know who it was calling. I wanted to roll down the window and bean him in the back of his dumb fucking skull with the phone. But all I said was, "Keep walking." He knocked. There was no answer. He knocked again. There was no answer again. I heard something faint but distinct over the line.
"What was that?"
I asked him.
"She just told me to stop banging on the door and fuck off."
"Okay. Look. Just repeat after me. Loud."
"Yeah?"
"Barda, I know you're angry, and I know I hurt you." He said it, mechanically, not really thinking about the words, I don't think. "You have every right to that anger," I kept feeding him. "But when we talked, I didn't recognize that. Instead, I attacked you for it. Your anger made me feel small, and the only way I knew to defend myself was to hurt you again. I'm pathetic."
"Hey!"
Carrie said indignantly into his phone. "You can argue the philosophical points with me later," I told him. He repeated what I said, not verbatim, but close enough. For a cold reading, it wasn't terrible. "I know you're still mad, but you don't want my death on your conscience," I said. "I'm not a bad person, I just have a lot of bad qualities, including, but not limited to, getting drunk and invariably pissing all over myself, which my friends are then forced to clean up."
"Dude!"
Carrie yelled almost before I was done. I didn't let up. "My mother really did a number on me, and I can't relate meaningfully to women that aren't her as a result. I have to objectify them to keep my distance, and then fuck them over to achieve some kind of sad transference revenge on my mom."
"I'm not fucking saying that,"
Carrie hissed into the phone. "Carrie, I will put whatever's left of my foot in your ass."
"God damn it, Mac,"
he said, and took the earpiece out. I thought Carrie was going to walk back to the car pouting, but he didn't. Instead, he dropped his head, put his hands on his hips, and kept talking to the door. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but he looked like he was rambling. He kept shifting from foot to foot like a nervous kid. It took him 5 or 10 minutes to get out whatever it was he said, but at the end of that time, The door finally opened again. Barda stood there. She didn't look happy, but I think her body language had changed, just a little. She said something. He said something back. They did that for another couple of minutes. Finally, Barda nodded and closed the door. Carrie stood on her porch for a little while longer. I couldn't see his face, but when he walked back to the car, it was clear he'd been crying. Carrie? Crying? I actually forgot about my foot for a second.
She absolved me,
was all he said. And I didn't ask him any questions. So, was it my plan to humiliate him over the phone until he was forced to dig out some genuine feelings? Sure. Why not? My ankle healed. I got a prosthetic shoe for my right foot. Three of them, actually. One for every occasion. And being a guy, three pairs of shoes covers that easy. I limp when I don't wear them. Just a little. But don't worry about me. I was fully covered through the agency against collateral Logie injury. Better than that, it paid out triple because I was aiding in an act of absolution. I took the money and my sick leave and convalesced down at Sanibel Island. With my heroic road story, I even got laid a couple of times. Not too bad for McBride, all in all. Carrie never paid me back. I told him he didn't have to. That's Logie insurance of another kind. Thank you for listening to Absolution Insured by Matt Wallace, narrated by Rick Stringer. And now, here is a promo from our friends at MyMac.com.
Okay, Jack, this is the MyMac.com podcast promo. You're the pro. Just run with it.
In a world where laughter was king.
Yeah, that really doesn't work for us.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we're funny, but this is a podcast about Macintosh, the world of Macintosh.
What do you mean, no, in a world?
Well, it's in the world of Macintosh computing. We talk about all things Apple and Mac.
Yeah, it's called the MyMac.com podcast. You know, Mac is in Macintosh.
Okay, Jack, let's try it again.
One man.
No, sorry. It's actually two of us.
Two people? Both Tim and I do the weekly podcast.
Two of us, Chad and Tim. No one man thing.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Whoa, feedback.
Whoops, sorry, hit the wrong button.
Okay, try it again.
In a land before time.
What? No, dude, no. What the heck?
Look, Jack, we know you're used to doing voiceovers for movies, but...
Yeah, this is a podcast, the MyMac.com podcast. It's like a radio show, but it's on the internet. You get it? Okay?
Okay.
No, seriously, this isn't a movie trailer, okay? You know what? I just don't think you're going to be right for this.
Yeah, I gotta agree. Sorry, dude. We don't want our podcast promo to sound like some movie trailer or something.
So you know what this means, right?
I'm fired.
Yeah, afraid so. Okay, Chad, let's just roll the intro to our podcast.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There's nothing pretentious about that, at least.
Dude, that's not our intro music. What? Jack!
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Jack, quit playing the Rocky theme song. This is not a movie trailer.
Stop it.
No, I like it in here.
Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
Well, so much for our promo.
Thank God it was only a promo.
Oh, man. Oh, well.
We hope you enjoyed listening to Variant Frequencies. We look forward to sharing future adventures with you.